Chapter 20. God's Giver. My published works are teachers and healers. My private life is given to a servitude, the fruit of which all mankind may share. Mary Baker Eddy, 1904. A step stressing healing was launched in October and was given as a problem to the Board of Trustees of the Publishing Society to solve. Kinter's letter from Pleasant View to the chairman of the board, William P. McKenzie, stated, "There is a matter of considerable import, to which I beg to invite the attention of your board, that is to say, the names in our journal directory. As I understand it, the directory is intended as a book of reference to those seeking help, of reliable Christian Science practitioners, persons able and ready to heal the sick, and whose first calling is the healing work. It is well known that there are many names of persons recorded in said register, who not only never do any healing, but who intend not to, and whose time and energy are wholly mortgaged in other matters. Furthermore, the journal has become top-heavy, and something must be done to make room for more reading matter. P.S. I will venture to hint that if the program is not already unchangeably made up for the coming teachers' meeting, that would be a suitable place to discuss the subject, as it is really in the hands of the teachers." Quote, "The coming teachers' meeting," end quote, the second annual meeting of the General Association of Teachers, was to be held in Chicago on October 24th and 25th. Young Bliss Knapp had just been notified that he had been made a member of this association, although he was not yet a teacher. Mrs. Stetson wrote from Chicago to her students the day before the meeting, "I am waiting on God. No one yet knows anything that is to be done. All are very happy, and the association will give a power to the body, as all these old soldiers, teachers, battle-scarred but strong, take a firmer hold upon the infinite, and press forward to the end of all error. I pray that you all may feel the pulse of the great heart of love, and that you will rise into newness of life, and see the reward of your efforts for self-abnegation, consecration, divine love, and unity. Oh, watch with your Christ, protect your Christ child, your spiritual consciousness, or Herod, mortal so-called mind, will destroy it. Choose to walk with God and trust God to care for you. Learn to lose with God. Lose your material sense of yourselves and of others. Lose your trust in material ways and means to an end. Lose your sensuous appetites and tastes, and see that God is substance, who supplies our material needs until he is found to be our only support. Be not murmurers in the wilderness, nor cry for the quail and garlic. I pray that you will be circumspect and never repeat to the unbelievers what sacrifices of personal sense and self you make to reach eternal life and your oneness with principle. They would not understand your consecration and could not see your reward in love, peace, and joy. How few are ready to grow gradually out of the human into the divine. If we are ready, we should not reprove another who was not able to run so fast as we the race for immortality, nor offend him by repeating our victories over material sense. God bless each of you, my dear students, and may I bring you fresh inspiration from this meeting. Mrs. Stetson did not yet know anything that was to be done, but some of the others did, one of whom was Herbert W. Eustace, a teacher from San Jose, California. Mr. Eustace addressed the association on the theme of obedience to the discoverer, founder, and leader of Christian Science, an obedience which, to make this army of workers impregnable, he said must be unbounded, unswerving, unqualified, and unconditional. On the first day of their meeting, which was largely attended by members from practically every state in the Union, a dispatch of greeting was sent to the leader, expressing recognition and appreciation, and ending with, "We love you, but your abundant reward rests in the full fruitage of the divine declaration, quote, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, ye have done it unto me," end quote. Dutifully awaiting any communication you may desire to make to the association, we are sincerely your students. All of these students were called to do God's work, and a few of them were chosen. Many are called, few are chosen, and a very few are sent. Jesus told his disciples that the Father had sent him. Mrs. Eddy told the same thing to her disciples, but hid it from the worldly, when she published in Christ in Christmas, quote, "In tender mercy, Spirit sped a loyal ray," end quote. Now this, quote, "loyal ray," end quote, said it again to these called and chosen students who were awaiting a communication from her. In her response on October 25th, Miscellany, page 253, their leader stated simply, "I thank you. Jesus said, quote, the world hath not known thee, but I have known thee, and these have known that thou hast sent me," end quote. The problem which Mrs. Eddy had given to her trustees was most probably put before the Teachers Association as suggested. It is also probable that the issue was intended to cause these thinkers to place healing above teaching in their work, as Mrs. Eddy was always endeavoring to do. It is also a possibility that the message in a 1904 letter to her directors found its way to this meeting. We want the right teaching of Christian Science, or none at all. I am so disappointed in my students in this respect. I have no words to utter myself. It absolutely disgusts me to hear them babble the letter and after that fail in proving what they say. It is high time that they stop talking science or prove their words true. In the summer, she had voiced this disappointment to Nimi Robertson, who enjoyed a longer than usual visit with the leader at Pleasant View. She told her never to be satisfied until she healed with one treatment, or not more than three. She then told Miss Robertson a number of her own instantaneous healings and ended by saying, quote, "Divine love alone can heal, and to know that God is all covers the whole ground," end quote. As she said this to Miss Robertson, quote, "she seemed transfigured and glorified. It was wonderful," end quote. But the leader's disappointment with the healing work caused Nimi Robertson to write her a comforting letter, to which Mrs. Eddy responded on August 13th. Your letter I do not understand, but I know your tenderness and trust it will help you on. You mistake, dear one, in thinking I am sad. I am the very opposite, and filled with gladness and gratitude for the unsurpassed prosperity of Christian Science. It was only when naming the need of more and better healers in the field that my face expressed my disappointment. Do not think I am not the happiest of the happy, for I am, and I should be, but address yourself and fellow students to leave behind the fashions and foibles and pride and vanity of the world, and to demonstrate Christian Science. Teaching and church making and leading will never demonstrate what is taught. In the fall of 1904, there were nearly 15 pages of advertisements for Christian Science institutes all across the United States, as well as Canada and Germany, and many of the owners of these institutes were the teachers attending this meeting of the General Association of Teachers in Chicago. Perhaps the fact that the Board of Education did not advertise was brought up. Perhaps they discussed the bylaw entitled, quote, Healing Better Than Teaching, end quote. Whatever the reason, following the meeting, a number of teachers withdrew their institute advertisements from the pages of the journal. A month later, the trustees proposed omitting all institute advertisements, beginning in January. Mrs. Eddy told her secretary, George Kinter, answer for me that I say do what they, the trustees, think is best on this subject. I like their decision. Mr. Kimball's successor as the teacher for the Board of Education was Eugene H. Green of Providence, Rhode Island, and he approached his new position with trepidation. A week or two after the meeting in Chicago, Mr. Green wrote Mrs. Eddy that he still felt unready and unworthy for this position. At the convening of his first Board of Education class early in December, he wrote the leader, I appreciate far clearer than ever before what it has cost you to bring this spiritual idea to humanity. I am grateful for the help you are imparting to me. I am conscious of such a spiritual lack and need, I can only ask constantly for divine strength and guidance. This primary class sent a letter and telegram to Mrs. Eddy at Pleasant View. One sentence in her reply, miscellany, page 253, has meant much to many students. Quote, we understand best that which begins in ourselves and by education brightens into birth, end quote. Following the teachers' meeting in Chicago, Mrs. Stetson met with the members of her New York Christian Science Institute. The main item on their agenda was a telegram to the leader, part of which read, we reconsecrate ourselves, that we may demonstrate the spiritual cooperation, which is the unity to which your wise leadership calls us. Our earnest aim is to reach your exalted ideals of purity and power. The leader caused their telegram to be published in both the Sentinel and Journal, together with her reply, which read, quote, accept my thanks and loving congratulation. Jesus said, my sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me." End quote. On the last day in October, editor McClellan wrote Mrs. Eddy, "The enclosed letters from Mr. McCartney and Mr. Miller of Philadelphia testify to the wisdom of all your steps in connection with, quote, Bohemia, end quote. I thank you for having used me in this matter. If it seems best to you, I shall comply with Mr. McCartney's request." Bohemia was intended as a masterpiece. It was a huge volume produced by the International League of Press Clubs, which was published in the summer of 1904. This collection of able American journalism was augmented by articles expressly prepared for this publication by men of distinction, presidents, ex-presidents, kings, admirals, etc. One of the, quote, men, end quote, of distinction, the few specially selected contributors, was a woman, Mary Baker Eddy. When James McCartney had proposed an, quote, official presentation, end quote, of Mrs. Eddy's especially made volumes of the book, she had declined graciously. An account of their delivery to Pleasant View by special messenger was published in the Concord Monitor, which account included, "It is a notable fact that Mrs. Eddy's is the only contribution in the book which deals with other than a literary or personal theme, and this will be taken as another indication of the widening scope of her recognition and influence." Mrs. Eddy's contribution, as well as all of her steps relating thereto, was one of her charities, a giving of her precious time to the demands of the world. The world, of course, did not see it as a charity, for it knew not the value of the woman's time. But one of the editors of Bohemia did get an unforgettable lesson regarding the worth of Mrs. Eddy's every minute. Arthur Talmadge Abernathy had come in contact with Mrs. Eddy in his editorial capacity, and at a later date made an impromptu social call at Pleasant View when he found himself in Concord with free time. In response to his message asking for an interview, the busy leader sent down her message on a card, quote, "I am very busy. I would rather give you $1,000 than a minute of my time," end quote. In a light, jesting mood, Mr. Abernathy returned the card with the penned note, quote, "My initials are ATA," end quote. ATA, Abernathy may have expected to be received, but he was not expecting what he did receive, which left him stunned and somewhat ashamed. As he was leaving the house, a messenger handed him Mrs. Eddy's engraved card, quote, "with compliments of," end quote, in Mrs. Eddy's handwriting above her name. Her handwriting was also on the accompanying check made out to Mr. Abernathy for $1,000. The demands upon the leader's time and money were numerous and continuous. Though she guarded the former as zealously as possible, she was very generous with the latter, responding with donations to unending solicitations. Her generosity endeared a great many hearts to her, if not to her cause, but the stream of requests and demands increased to a flood. On November 18th, she wrote, quote, "Charity and Invalids," end quote, Miscellany, page 231, and sent it to her editor. Her article began, "Mrs. Eddy endeavors to bestow her charities for such purposes only as God indicates. Giving merely in compliance with solicitations or petitions from strangers incurs the liability of working in wrong directions. As a rule, she has suffered most from those whom she has labored much to benefit, also from the undeserving poor to whom she has given large sums of money, worse than wasted. She has, therefore, finally resolved to spend no more time or money in such uncertain, unfortunate investments." Quote, "Charity and Invalids," end quote, was published in the Sentinels of November 26th and December 3rd, and was not only notification to the field, but a guide to her followers. Her contributions to the endeavors of others never ceased, but perhaps this notice reduced the flood of solicitations. At any rate, it was a guide for her secretaries, who opened the hundreds of letters addressed to Mrs. Eddy, which found their way to Pleasant View. A notice that appeared in the Sentinel of November 5th was entitled, quote, "Holiday Gifts," end quote, and began, quote, "The holidays are coming, and I trow you are awaiting on behalf of your leader the loving liberty of their license," end quote. The world has never had a giver of gifts that could equal Mary Baker Eddy. She gave to the world not only her great discovery of the science of being, but every moment of her time for its establishment in the hearts of all who would accept this pearl priceless. In addition, she was constantly giving charming and often costly gifts to her helpers, such as one she sent to Calvin C. Hill in 1904, a small reproduction of a photograph of herself, accompanied by a $20 gold piece and the message, quote, "Accept my golden gift as the symbol of your golden rule of life," end quote. Mr. Hill was superintendent of the Mother Church Sunday School in 1904 and may have been one of the many who caused Mr. McClellan to write to the leader early in November. "We receive a great many requests for the republication of your article regarding the Sunday School work entitled, quote, What We Can Do for the Children," end quote, which appeared in the October 1895 journal. "If you see that the republication of this article is desirable at the present time, will you kindly give me permission to republish it in the Sentinel?" Mrs. Eddy penned on McClellan's letter, quote, "Beloved student, publish the above article as often as is best to do so," end quote. This was followed by incorporating the essence of her article into the manual as bylaws for the Sunday School. The December Journal published an appreciative letter from the Mother Church Sunday School superintendent, Calvin Hill, alongside the leader's cryptic reply. "Good deeds overdone numerically, or bad deeds, are remedied by reading the manual." The gifts from Mrs. Eddy that all her students treasured most in the years to come were her letters of concern, comfort, and reassurance. One day in 1904, she wrote to her secretary, George Kinter, who was briefly confined to his room struggling with a problem. God is nearer than ever before to you. Divine love holds you up. You cannot fall. His arms are around you. If you would like to have your dear wife with you just now, be sure and send for her. In her notice, quote, holiday gifts, end quote, this giver of gifts asked her followers to, quote, bring all your tithes into his storehouse, and what you would expend for presents to her, please add to your givings to the Mother Church Building Fund, and let this suffice for her rich portion in due season, end quote. Another request the leader made near the end of 1904 was almost a gift. She asked Mr. Johnson's son, William Lyman, in a letter dated November 2nd, to write music for her hymns, Christ My Refuge, or Waiting Harp Strings of the Mind, and Feed My Sheep, Shepherd, Show Me How to Go. Both of young Mr. Johnson's arrangements appeared in the next revision of the hymnal. In mid-December, the leader wrote to her faithful Augusta in New York, December 17, 1904. My darling student, I have tried to reply sooner, but I could not. Do not doubt my love for you, my faith in you, and my faithful rebuke if need be. Above all, dear one, know that God knows your good works and will reward them, that he loves you and her whom he has called loves you, just as tenderly in giving you his rod or his staff, and by them both, his rod and support. You cannot doubt his care and love for you, my precious one. Now be of good cheer. Be not afraid, for such are God's proofs to all his own, that they are his, and none can pluck them out of his hands. Your explanation is so comforting to me that I thank him and you for it with tears of joy. Malicious animal magnetism is busy at this wicked moment now that my works are being better appreciated. But where is the Christianity that Christian Science brings to all who understand it, the golden rule that governs it, and should, must govern all who live Christian Science? I thank God for your good works and love you more and more. The last Sentinel in December 1904 contained an article Mrs. Eddy had written for the Boston Globe, How Strife May Be Stilled, Miscellany, page 278. One sentence therein should be a guide to the whole world. Quote, governments have no right to engraft into civilization the burlesque of uncivil economics, end quote. She closed her article with the solution for all wars in one sentence. God is Father, infinite, and this great truth, when understood in its divine metaphysics, will establish the brotherhood of man, end wars, and demonstrate, quote, on earth peace, goodwill toward men, end quote.